to yet another Coffee Conversations with myself, Vivian Choni, a podcast where we sit down with your favorite musician and we have coffee and really get to know them. This is where conversation becomes connection. And before I introduce my guest for this episode, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody that has listened to the podcast, that has liked and shared. Please do continue to watch us on YouTube, and we're also on all the audio platforms that are available. Right, so my guest for this episode is someone who I am incredibly excited about. He is one of the voices that are really changing the face of storytelling. He is a singer. He's a songwriter. He's a composer. He is a well-rounded creative, and I think that he does storytelling so well. Please help me welcome on to Coffee Conversations, Muneyi.
Muneyi.
Oh my God, it's Muneyi.
Oh my God, it's Muneyi.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you on this podcast. Before we actually start, where does that come from? Because like, I remember every time I saw you perform and there'd be people, you know, just screaming, oh my God, it's Muneyi. And then I caught on and I became that person. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you heard me there at Diduzo's show. But where does that come from?
Oh, it's so funny. It comes from a guy I like, this guy that I was seeing, you know, we had a fling. And he worked in the hospitality industry. So sometimes I'd go to his workplace with my friends, we'd go hang out. And obviously there'd be people that I knew, people who knew me. And when we were hanging out, when it was just us, he'd say, oh, you know, every time we're out, there's just always this guy say, oh my God, it's Muneyi. Oh my God, it's Muneyi. And it just sort of stuck. So I think then I told the story somewhere and then people just ran with it. And it's so funny. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. But welcome, Muneyi.
Thank you.
I was reading an article, a written interview that you did, and you describe your childhood as simple and complete. And I thought, wow, what a way to describe being raised. But what I like to do is take people back and just paint a picture into the artist's life, right? You grew up in Venda, of course. And you had this very simple and complete childhood. And then I discovered that at some point you went to the University of Venda and you studied biology and chemistry. And I was like, what? And then you then pivoted to film. But I think let's go back, you know, to that little boy, Muneyi, growing up in Venda and discovering music.
Interesting. I feel like because of the way Venda is set up, everything feels coincidental. Like it feels like it happened the way it was meant to happen. I don't think even though there was music in proximity to my existence, I would have been interested like that. So my father's elder brother, my uncle, he's actually a musician. Like he's a gospel musician. He's been singing for as long as I've been alive. But it never registered to me, you know, he was my uncle, you know, first. I didn't see him as this musician. But at some point in my late teens, I started going to church and I went to a church that I won't mention that had a lot of music. They had like a big band and I was interested. I was quite interested. And I remember the time I auditioned to be part of the church choir. And they were just like, oh, maybe try Shower Records, you know, like literally that's what they said. And that didn't work out. So then I joined the school choir, which was sort of like, it wasn't a formal school choir. It was assembled by another student who's an amazing musician. His name is King D Music. If you know, he makes contemporary Christian music. Brilliant guy. And during study hours or during break time, we'd all just come together, learn a song, and then morning assembly would recite that song. And I realized I really loved that. And, you know, even in choir, you grow up the ranks, you know. So I went from just singing tenor to being like a part leader, you know, to then having a solo. And I just loved singing. It wasn't really a thing I was thinking about. I thought I was going to be a scientist. Firstly, I thought I was going to be a computer scientist. I had applied at the University of Pretoria to study computer sciences. I went to UP, but I didn't get funding. And by the time I had gotten funding, registrations had closed, or like the course was full. So then I went back to Venda and then to then do chemistry and biology, because that was one of the things that I was interested in. But while I was there, I started learning how to play guitar through like a friend. She had a guitar. She was planting a church there, and we used to just hang out. She was also one of the res wardens there. We were all just hanging out in her space, and she was like a big sister to us. And I borrowed the guitar, and there was another band, another Christian band around, that was starting out, and I borrowed one of the guitar books. And 3 months in, I could play a few chords. Then I befriended another guy who was a guitarist for a big band. It all just feels like all of this music was happening to me. But I think the actuality of being a musician came when I moved to Johannesburg and I had dropped out of my degree, my chemistry degree. I moved to Joburg and I was staying with a friend that I had met through another friend. And he was a full-time musician. I think for the first time in 2025, I was like, I could actually do this. I remember it was the 30th of April. It was a Sunday, I think. And we had gone to his church, to Grace Point Church in Glenfinnes, just after Lone Hill. And I got there and I was watching, I was there for the church practice, for like the band practice in the morning, stayed for the morning service. And after the morning service, I asked the worship leader if I could play his guitar, and I played. And he was like, "Oh, do you have your own guitar?" And I said, "No." And he gifted me two guitars on the
No
spot. He had just
way.
met me. Yeah. And then I just sort of like started practicing. And then at some point, my friend said, "Well, if you have all this time since you're on a gap year, why don't you just go volunteer at the youth church there?" So then I started volunteering in the youth ministry there, and I'd play guitar, which felt like my practice sessions. And over time, I started singing in the evening adult church, and that felt like my practice session. And yeah. And then next thing, I was writing my own music, which wasn't Christian music. Yeah, that's sort of like young Monet's music trajectory, me finding the music. Yeah.
Wow. And I love that you said the music was happening to you. For someone like me, who, I mean, I think my first encounter with you was here in Joburg,
Yes.
and I could not imagine that you did not even have formal music education because of how brilliant you are. But I think that also says a lot about how talented you are.
True.
So again, you picked up the guitar, later in your life because you wanted to complete your studies, because this is a you had committed to studying and completing your studies, and then getting into the music thing. But I want to now understand, at what point now do you discover, okay, you've played the guitar. At what point now do you discover your voice? Because your voice, I always remind you, like at any given moment, I will remind you just how I think your voice has a lot of worship and prayer and yearning. It has all of these feelings, and I can't help it as the listener to pick that up. But yeah, maybe paint a picture for us of when you actually discovered your voice.
I was surrounded by people who had such individual voices. It was hard not to find my own. So the person I was living with was NJ Kunene, who's an amazing, amazing singer, brilliant writer. I really loved his perspective. And every time I'd write or I'd sing, he'd always encourage me to sing it the way Monet would. And I think for a while I didn't know what that meant. But over time, I started easing into this feeling of, when do I feel best when I'm singing? Like, what's the feeling like in my body? Where does it sit? When do I feel like, oh, that was so, cathartic for me? And once you find that frequency, that becomes your voice. So even if you're given a a Zoe song, a Zoe Modiha song to sing as Monet. Like, I won't sing it like Zoe. It will still be Zoe's song, but the translation will be a Monet translation. And I think it's just an internal thing. I think it's like when people paint, even if they might say, oh, I'm inspired by William Kendridge, or I'm inspired by Banela Khoza, your style will still come through. And that's what people resonate with. And I think your voice is, it's your DNA. You know, it's what makes you you. And luckily for music and other art forms, people are able to recognize that as an individual thing. Even if they may liken you to someone, they may say, oh, you know, if Vusi Mahlasela was young, if Oliver Mtukudzi was young, or if this person was young, or Richard Bona, it reminds me of that. But they can still tell that this is an individual who is expressing themselves and telling their own story. Yeah,
it's so funny you mentioned Oliver, because as I was listening to your current offering, I thought to myself, Monet has the ability to bring you into the feeling of the song. And that's what Oliver Mtukudzi was able to do.
Yes, fully.
I had no idea what he was saying.
Yes.
You know, but that feeling was always invoked in me. So I think let's talk about you as a storyteller. You went and you studied film. And you say that you wanted to express yourself in a way that, you know, people could understand.
Yes.
And even though you do it in your native language, you are still able to tell, you know, a very good story through your music. Why was it important for you to tell it in Tshivenda?
It wasn't an intentional thing at first. Initially, the first song I wrote was in English, and I love that song. It just hasn't found a world to live yet, but maybe someone will sing it on my behalf. But when I wrote the first Tshivenda song, I had these friends, these two young women who ran a magazine called Conte Magazine, which was really just highlighting Africa from the beauty, the photography, art, history. They ran this beautiful space out of 44 Stanley, and I had been interning there in my first year in 2016, and they had an issue. One of the issues was called Raw. They titled it Raw, and they asked me to come sing at the launch, and I said, you know what, maybe as part of adding on to the whole Raw thing, let me write a song this morning. Let me write all the music that morning. Cool. And then go perform it. So that's exactly what I did. But for some reason, the way the music came out, like the way I'd written was very like, I was struggling to write in English. Also, it's my third language. I couldn't really express myself the way I was feeling. And I was feeling more confident in my story and what I wanted to say, but the language was getting in the way. So I just wrote in Tshivenda. And I guess the closest poetic person to me is my grandmother. So I was sort of channeling, how would she say this, and what could I say that she would understand? And you know, that's the music that ended up being on my first album, and it's heavily inspired by her life. So that's sort of like where it started. Along the line, my grandmother found out that I was a musician on top of having finished my degree and all of that, and she had one of my songs on radio and she really loved it. And this is before I'd finished making the albums. I'd written maybe 4 or 5 songs. So while that's happening, one of the evenings, I think it's the day Burundi came out. When Burundi came out, everyone was listening to it. It was in the thick of lockdown. And people found a lot of resonance with the story, the loneliness. And, you know, I was on radio, I was doing interviews. There was just a lot happening. So then when she heard the song in the evening, when we're having evening devotion, she sort of like said in a prayer that, you know, she really prays that, you know, this thing that I'm doing takes me far and that I always have a new song to sing. And it felt like she had given me her blessing, considering how she had felt when I dropped out and how she felt about the idea of me being a musician. and her just feeling like I needed to find stability in my life, and she felt like school was that. And I was saying to her, but I'm still going to school. I actually have a whole degree. Like I could do anything really if I wanted. But I guess because she didn't grow up in that system and in that world, she couldn't understand fully. So her giving me that blessing really liberated me, not only to sing in my own language, but also to sing in a language where she would be my quality controller. So I could write all this music and then play it to her. And then she would say, no, I would have said it like this, which she still does. and now I play her the music after it's recorded because too many edits. My editor has too many notes. And over time then, it went from seeking my grandmother's validation to wanting to preserve the language. Because while you're writing, you're also looking for references, you know. And as I don't listen to a lot of things, but I do like to read. And if you're Googling a book or a journal or a text, and there's such limited text on the internet that are written in Tshivenda, that sort of like sparked something in me. I thought, you know, let me add on to the archive, but also let me do it with integrity, but also let me do it carefully. I don't want to be reckless. So it became an intentional thing to preserve the language, even if it's orally, to preserve the folk tales. So a lot of my music has all of these nursery rhymes and all of these folk tales that we grew up hearing from our grandmothers reciting back to us. So that became a task for me.
And on behalf of our generation, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are doing incredible.
I'm trying my best, guys.
You are doing amazing. Would you then say that Bulutu was the song that got Muneyi out there as an artist, as a musician? Was it the song?
It probably was. When I look back, I think it was a song that made people realize something. You know, they think it's a song that made people feel like, oh, okay, this guy has something to say, and whatever he has to say, we don't necessarily have to hear it, but we will always feel it. Because I put out Rufuno before then. Then I had won the Afropunks Battle of the Bands, which came with a lot of publicity. But I think the publicity that came with winning the competition lacked context. It just, you won this competition for this big, big festival that's all over the world. But it wasn't telling my story. It was just saying, this person exists. And by the time Burudu came out and people resonated the way they did, I think that's when people were like, oh, okay, maybe we should give this person a chance. So when my album came out a few months later in May the following year, then people were waiting and willing to listen. Yeah.
And I must say that I really enjoy how you're able to move from one, from addressing one topic to the next. So you'll address, you'll address grief, but you'll also protest.
And yes.
You know, I particularly enjoy that. So let's get into the music. In 2021, you dropped Makulu.
Yes.
An incredible album. I think that was your, at least for me, your introduction to the world.
It really was, yeah.
And thank you to your grandmother for those prayers. Right. Because it really did what it was supposed to do. And I remember vividly when I had heard Makulu, I thought, I didn't know that you were a local guy. I didn't think you were South African. And I wasn't the only one because, you know, the conversations were happening around.
Yes.
Is this guy, you know, South African? Who is this guy?
Yes.
Like, and I think it was the most perfect intro into, you know, Muneyi's world. But let's talk a little bit about Makulu, and then we'll move into Shumela Venda, because that is actually the reason why you're here. you know, of course, it was inspired by your grandmother. One of the interviews, you said that you had an overwhelming urge to be understood by your grandmother.
True.
Do you feel that, you know, that album at least did that?
It did.
But yeah, let's talk about the album and the inspiration, just weaving the music.
I mean, when I made that album, I was also quite anxious. You know, the album was recorded in 2020, around late May to early June. That's when every other day, someone that we knew was burying someone, a loved one. And for someone who's as, you know, elderly as my grandmother, she was more susceptible to being wiped out by this virus that was supposedly, you know, taking people's lives. I was in Johannesburg, she was in Venda, and knowing that I couldn't, if I went to Venda, I wouldn't be able to sit still at home. I opted to sit to stay in the city, but I also knew if something happened to her, I wouldn't be able to potentially go to her funeral because of all the restrictions. So, as someone who raised me and as my primary caregiver, I kept asking myself, I know I'm young, I just finished university 2 years ago. I've been figuring my life out, but should this person pass, would I have thanked her enough? Would I have used enough words to say, hey, you are the person that's responsible for my existence. You know, with the little that you had, you made sure that I went to school. You motivated me, took care of me, cooked for me every day. I'd come back home to hot pap every day, even though I don't eat hot pap. Like, my granny didn't care. I'd come back and she would have cooked, and I'd say, but you know, I don't eat hot pap.
Oh, that's
You
so
know,
good.
but she loved me. That it was her act of love, showing me love. She had raised me literally. Like, I went everywhere with her. I was only in preschool for maybe a year. Yeah, because the entire time, like, I was with my grandmother. We were in the orchard. I was doing everything with my granny. So that was the motivation, but it was also fueled by anxiety. Like, I want to finish this album while she's still alive. I want her to. I want if she says yes, then I know I can do this, even if she's not here anymore. If she says no, then there's nobody else's word that matters as much as hers, you know? That was the motivation. So I made the album. I was staying in Melville with a friend of mine, Jeff, at the time, who's an amazing musician. And we sort of workshopped the music together. We had been playing this music, you know, from when we were preparing for Afropunk all the way, like, January, February. There was some traction because of the Afropunk stuff, so we did play some gigs. And when the lockdown was announced in March, we were just in the house thinking, we don't know what we're going to do. Our landlord said we can stay here. So I put up a backer buddy. I put up a backer buddy on Twitter. I was like, guys, it's lockdown and some of you will be working from home. You still have money. I won't be working. And since I won't be gigging, can you please donate money for me to at least make an EP? That was the initial plan. And then what happened was, I have these friends who've been so supportive that I've met through the friend I mentioned initially, NJ Kunene. And they reshared my post, and it was seen by this gentleman called Robin Fernie. He's in Pretoria, he's got a studio, and he donated 2 days of studio time. So I sat down with Jeff and I said, you know, in two day one, we could record a full album, and day two, we could edit. And then we could use the money to pay other session musicians, and we'll have a recorded album. We can always figure out how it's gonna get mixed, but let's take the opportunity. So, called friends. It's also how I lost my varsity best friend, because he was also a musician, and I said, "Hey, we're doing this recording. Come." And he was like, "Oh, I can't. I'm not leaving the house. Yada 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 yada." And yeah, I don't want to share that story, but anyway, we were
I know all about
yeah,
it. So yeah.
yeah, we recorded the album, and yeah, then another friend stepped forward and said, "I'll mix for X amount of money. I'm not doing anything." You know, and I know you're not making money, so I'll mix for a fraction of my rate. And because of Afropunk, I had gotten a distribution deal. I think back then I didn't fully understand what it entailed. And I don't think I was supported as I should have been supported if I knew what a distribution deal was then. But that helped. You know, I didn't have to load the music myself and figure out how all of that works. So I put up I put out the project on the 7th of May in 2021, and I just hoped for the best, really. And ever since then, it's just been me trying to always tell my story. There was a lot of anxiety after making the first album because you get put in a box, you know. I became this granny boy who loves his grandmother, and he's this and he's that, and I was just like, that's just one small part of my existence. Like, I'm actually a bad bitch. Like, so I think that then inspired how I approached my expression in my next couple of works.
And I think it's interesting that you recorded that album in 2 days, and it was fully packaged,
And I
right?
hadn't seen the guy since the 28th of February. I think the 29th of February. I think it was a leap year. I don't remember.
Oh, no
But we had
way.
last seen each other in February, the band, that is. And then
Yes.
we met again, I think, the 26th of May in studio, and we had an hour to rehearse the music we had last heard a few months ago. And every second take is what you hear on the album.
And your projects seem to be May babies. Correct me if I'm wrong, because
Yeah,
I'm
usually
thinking I
early
look.
first part of the
Oh,
year.
winter babies, no?
Yeah.
Geminis.
I do not like Gemini man. I'm gonna say that just as people, as friends, as lovers, terrible. But I th it's more I because I make slow burning music, it's if I release in the first and second quarter of the year, it promoters and fans and everyone listening, they have enough time to listen to it through the winter. Then by the time spring and summer come, then I can book
I
shows.
love that. Oh, intentional.
Yeah, very,
I
very. So it's more of a
absolutely love that.
commercial decision than anything. Yeah.
All right. And then you had this EP for me was it's one where I was like, okay, Monet,
Which one was that?
for the boys I like.
Yes. Oh my God.
And for the boys I like, there is a song there that always piques my interest, and I always forget to ask you about it. But here we are. Letter to My Father.
Yes.
Can we unpack, how that song came
Oh,
about?
my friends were around this weekend, and they kept quoting that voice note at the end because it was Father's Day. They're like, "Hey,
Yes.
woromi, woromi, it's just I had such deep and confusing feelings about my relationship with my father, especially considering that he's a very young person. You know, I'm 30 this year. My father probably just turned 50. You know, so he's a very young person. So I've always felt like the generational gap is not crazy for him to not understand what I'm saying. I think with that project, you must understand, like, having done my market research, and having also studied what my audience is post my first project, it was people's parents. You know, it was so people would walk up to me and say, "Oh my gosh, I love your music. My mom played it for me." And but they're like, "Oh, okay, well, that's interesting." I didn't anticipate that my audience would have been the mature, crowd, but that's also great because they have buying power, so they can come to the concert. You have to ask them for money to go to the concert, and it's different. They might say no. So I felt like my first project had aged me a little bit, and I also felt like it didn't allow me the opportunity to be a young person who's exploring the world. So sometimes I'd tweet something, I said at Twitter, I'd post something on Twitter, and the reaction would be, "Whoa, not you saying that." And I'd be thinking, I'm literally in my
I'm
20s.
my coolest boy.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm literally in my 20s. Like, I'm 27. What do 27-year-olds say? So I wanted to be a little more personal. And at that time, I think the one thing that was happening in my life was I was in love every other week. I mean, looking back, I'm so glad it happened then and not now.
I
Would have
kind of
been
remember
a
that era.
I would rock up to a friend's braai with a person, and then other braai, there would be someone else. And I loved all of those people, and they know it because I told them. And but particularly there's 4 people on that. There's myself and 3 people on the cover.
Yes.
Yeah. I think those were like my core my
Okay.
core lovers.
Okay.
But Letter to My Father was me feeling like my relationship with my sexuality had me asking myself if my father had stayed, would I be a queer man? And I closed the song by saying no, you know. But I wanted to address feelings that a lot of young boys have where they sort of like equate their sexuality to fatherlessness. And it's like, you need a father, whether you're straight, bi, gay, lesbian, it doesn't matter. You need a parent, you know, and the absence of one parent won't make you this or the other. You might be wounded, but no amount of wounds can alter your sexuality. That's where I wanted to start before I could share my stories about love and my stories about being hurt in love. And yeah, finding hope again. So my father does this thing where, I mean, he is so random. Even this year, I think he sent me a message. Was it last year? I think it was last year in December. We don't speak, and I choose not to interact with him because he doesn't want to have a conversation. He just wants to speak to me. So at that particular moment when he sent that voice note, we hadn't spoken in years, and he was sending a VN like, oh, just wave so I know you're alive. Hey, man, what's up? And I was like, that's what a friend says when you haven't spoken in 2 weeks. They say, oh, hey, friend, I've been so... Literally, he was doing that. And I thought it was so funny because on the one end, I'm experiencing such big feelings about this individual. And here they are, you know, being so trivial about their existence in my life. That's
my father. Thank you for sharing that. I promise you we're going to move to Shume 11. Your discography, actually, and you said something, I think it was on T-Bose's show, where you said, I want my discography to be like Tandis. So Tandis has what? Three, four
albums? Yeah, she's got three albums and one cover
album. But they have a long life.
They do.
And that's how
they
you do. Described how, yeah. what you would like your music, you know,
Absolutely.
To do,
yes.
to have a, you know, a long, long life. Before we get into Shume 11, there's a song, every time I listen to it, I can almost feel you at my core. Over and over again.
What,
can we go there?
Yeah.
What was happening there?
So, someone I really, really loved with all of my heart passed away. Like, I loved him so much. I really loved him. I loved him with all of my heart. He passed away, and when he passed, him and I weren't so good, but we were okay. You know, we would speak here and there. And I was so angry when he passed. And on a random night, I was sleeping, and he came in this dream. And in the dream, we're driving to a funeral. And he always used to pick me up in his car. So we're in the car, and I say, but you're not supposed to be here. Because I know, you know, he's passed away. So then he laughs. But like, I'm a light sleeper, and I'm always away, and I'm present in all of my dreams. Like, they don't happen to me. Even if I'm not participating, sometimes I just watch my dream happen. But in that particular dream, I was like, I miss you, so let me participate. So I said, hey, well, you're not supposed to be here. And he laughed. And there was something that he used to do that used to annoy me. So while we're in this dream, he's like, hey, I'll be back just now. And I'm like, but you didn't tell me you were going to go like this. You always do this. You always say, oh, but I have to go pick my sister up from the airport. And I always think we have the whole day, but you have to go. So then he leaves. And as he leaves, I woke up and I just started crying. And I picked up the guitar. My guitar is usually in my room with me. And it was quite like, it was like 2:30 or 4 a.m. I don't remember. It was quite early in the morning. And the feeling that I had was just this yearning. And I just wrote that, and I was just singing that, you know. You know, I wish you early in the morning, you know, and in the morning I can see all that we used to be, because, you know, it's just memories now. And in that moment, I was just like, even if you could live in a dream only, if I could dream about you every night for all of eternity, if that meant I could experience being loved by you over and over and over, it would be that. And I had been recording just as a way to remember the melody, because I knew I was going to sleep again. But along the line, I just broke down. And when we were in studio. It was myself. I started the recording with Rifi. He's an engineer. And then later with Phonix. And when we were recording, I was just playing on a MIDI. And I was like, the feeling I had, I'll never feel that again. So I'm just going to record the first part and we can add the voice note and just leave it as that.
Sure.
And funny, because when I was making There's a Burning Sensation Where My Heart Used to Be, I was mostly forgiving myself for a lot that had happened between me and him, you know. And I was just like, man, like, this could have been so simple. We understand each other, you and I. I was making the project and then he passed away.
Sure.
I was making it as a way to say, I forgive myself. And then when he passed away, it ended up being a grieving project.
The grief is felt in that song.
Yeah.
And I think you do something so beautiful where you're able to also pour or showcase your vulnerability in your music. And that's not something that everybody feels comfortable enough to do. So yeah, I mean, that song, every time I listen to it, I'm like, yo, ha.
For real. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it catches me off guard. Like, I think when I'm with people, if I'm in the house and we're playing music and it comes on, I just think back and I think I'm always going to remember him as this 24-year-old forever. If I live up to 50, I'm going to remember this person I loved, but they're just going to be this youthful looking person. And we used to share everything, you know, like I used to share the music with him. And but the journey of life is such that we never know and we're not meant to stay. And I've made peace with that. But there's a part of me that's like, oh, I wish I could just say hi. Not every day, but I wish now I could just open a portal and say, hey, I'm thinking of you. You won't believe what I've been doing for the past 3 months, but I love you and I think it's safer that you're there than here and I'll join you soon.
Yeah. Grief is hard, man.
Yeah.
But on to Shumela Venda, yes. Finally. Shumela Venda.
Yes, finally.
I promise you, like, when I listened to that project, I thought to myself, wait a minute. There is a very clear growth, first of all, in you as a musician, right? But when I listened to the album itself, it's very political. It's like a protest, but it's also very jazzy in its ways, you know. So I think let's start. I actually even took the track list down.
I love that.
So that we can unpack those songs, right?
Yes.
But I think let's start with Shumela Venda in itself, you know, as you know, the album and a track on the album.
Okay.
Shumela Venda, for me, it's got this jazzy you know, sound to it, but it's also very African. I was actually saying to my brother, I'm like, there's an element of the song that reminds me of Vusi Matlasela's Silang.
Oh, I love that song so much. Yes.
So yes, let's start with Shumela Venda. Let's unpack that as a song. And I guess the album title itself. Yeah.
I mean, as an album title, I think the context is mostly with Venda people because they understand Shumela Venda is people. Some people don't know that it's the old, slogan for the former Republic of Venda. They just know that there's Shumela Venda, and as a Venda person, we all Shumela Venda by default. You know, you work in the city and then you go invest back home, which I found very interesting as someone who's living in the city, and I have built my life in the city, and this city is also a part. The systems or the way of life in the city is one that you could move from here and go to Amsterdam and continue sort of a similar thread, or you could leave here and you could go to New York and sort of continue as a similar way of living, which I found that my life in Venda couldn't. I couldn't do that. And I found that I love this life that I live here, but at the same time, I am yearning constantly for a life in my homeland, you know? So then I had to do a little history lesson on my homeland. And firstly, Shimerevenda, why the nostalgia? Everyone speaks of Shimerevenda. Grown people say, you know, things were so much better during Mpepu's reign. Things were so much better when we were self-governing. And I'm just like thinking, no, as a born free, I don't think they were. You had to have a whole passport to come to South Africa, you know? Your leader believed in a government of no opposition. So if you were the opposition, you were going to go to the ground. So it's me just asking all of these questions. Firstly, what's with the Bantustan nostalgia? And it exists across Matanzi Misrule. It exists all the way to Mangope. People will say, oh, things were so much better when Mangope, you know, people were empowered. They didn't have to leave Buputatswana. They could just stay there and work there. And I'm interested in all of that. But I also decided very early on in making the album that I wasn't going to answer any questions, as in I'm not going to use the album as a way to tell the story of what happened and to answer the deep, hectic questions of, you know, what did Pian Pepu do? What, why, when, you know? I just wanted to create a body of work that would have anyone, be they Venda or in South African or part of the SADC region or anywhere in the world, to listen to the album and then ask the questions. And after asking the questions, if there's no one to answer those questions, then they can go do their own research. So that's what it's about for me. And the song itself, Shimerevenda, you know, just the sonic world starts, it starts with this little clip of people protesting, and it's the day when General Ramoshwana, who's also at the center of this project, who was a leader in the army who then took over the government, it starts with him being sworn in as the new leader of the Bavenda people. And unlike the other leaders, he has taken over the government, you know? So I start by imagining what the feeling was like in a country that was conditioned for years and years, even before the Bantustan rule, which was only from 13 September 1979 all the way to the early 90s. People are conditioned into a born leader, a born ruler, right? You have King Pepu, who now becomes President Mpepu, you know, and on and on and on. So when this guy comes into power, there's a lot of resistance as well. So people are protesting. So each song sort of shows you a different light and a different part of Venda life during that short period of 1979, but mostly the late 80s. Mostly the late 80s. And in terms of the sonic world of the song, I mean, I made most of the project with Tendai Shocks. Love him. We were going for a grunge, rocky feeling because it's something I love. I go to a lot of festivals. A lot of music I listen to is like that. And also, I think it's the modern day rebellion. And it's also the olden day rebellion. It might not be so within a South African context, but to an extent it still is. If you think about the Black Jacks, you know, if you think about Thandiswa Mazwai as well, Jackknife, is it Jackknife?
Jackknife.
Yeah, if you think about Jackknife. If you think about Urban Village to an extent as well, if you think about The Brother Moves On, there's a lot of our current expressions of rebellion are rocky. And, you know, especially Thandiswa's revelation, that's what inspired me. So I was using all of those things to also stray away from what people think is a typical Venda sound. Because I've already done that in Makuru. You know, like Makuru explored that. So, yeah.
I love how you're also able to bring in musicians from, for lack of a better word, different sort of like genre spaces. I mean, Duduzo comes through in Kalangwa.
Yes.
Which is Seasons.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And Umzulupaka. Oh, that is. Yeah. That is a beautiful, beautiful feature. Yes. Let's talk about these features and how they happened.
I mean, I'll start with the one with Umzulu. We made the song at a residency. Part of some work that I do is with a Danish organization, and we do these cross-culture residencies. And when I was there, I was like, oh, I'm thinking of these chords. And I was with Phonics, who's a friend of mine, and also we played together, and he produced part of For the Boys I Like and produced all of There's a Burning Sensation.
Mm.
And the topical issue or the thing that was like on my heart at the time was the abuse, you know, just abuse. And before it can even be termed as gender-based violence or any just abuse, and particularly to children. And I was writing about that, and I was sharing that experience of that sometimes parents just don't want to listen, and they don't realize just how harmful it is to not listen. And only later, when it's too late, then they want to reflect, oh, my child is now passed away. I should have listened. You know, that I should have listened when my child said they were being abused. That was sort of the conversation.
Mm.
And Umzulu is a brilliant writer. Like, that song happened in all of maybe 2 hours. You know, it had so many writers. Kozo Zona also wrote on it. His verse couldn't make it onto the song, else that song was going to be very long.
Mm.
We had another writer, Mandilake Ikaya. He's a brilliant singer and songwriter. But it was just all of us just reflecting as young people that we should always stand for what's important, and we should advocate for what's important to always be spoken about, you know, because if it's only the grown-ups advocating for it, then it sometimes feel like it will lose momentum. So that's sort of the song. And with Karangwa being the second feature, there were meant to be more features, and I'll speak about that shortly. But with Karangwa, I love Dr. Makatini's reflections on time, you know, especially in his way of thinking about time as an African. And Karangwa means seasons, right? It's a song about seasons. And for me, the song, when I was writing it, I picked a moment in a particular season. Actually, a day like today, or the last few days we've had, where it's a very cold day, but the sun is out. And in a particular window, you can sit in the sun and not feel the cold.
Mm.
And when you grow up in the village, there's certain things that if you see, you like, if you see lizards, you know, you'll want to maybe chase them away. But there are moments where unusual things show up in a particular season and they're allowed. So if it's a very cold winter day and it's warm, and for that 1 hour between 3:30 and 4:30, you're sitting outside and you see, even if you see a snake out, you probably won't flinch, because you'll think this thing is out of hibernation to just catch the sun, and it's going to go away. It's not here to harm anyone. So that's what the verses say. They speak about that moment, that brief moment on a warm summer day when the lizards are out and the enemies are gone and the heart is happy. And then the chorus speaks about how when the sun is out, you must bask in it. And if there's no sun, but someone has lit a fire and they're churning the fire, excuse me, then you can also bask in that warmth, because every season has its own thing.
Mm.
And even though he doesn't sing in the song, I really felt like the energy he would bring would be a timelessness, you know, which is what, you know, he speaks of. You know, he speaks of the past, present, and future all being with us and walking with us, and, you know, referencing this idea that, you know, the Western way of time is very sort of horizontal and linear, but the African way of thinking about time is sort of, you know, it's all mixed together. So I brought him on for that, you know, to really have that layer of timelessness, not just sonically, not for his musicality, which he is brilliant, and that didn't need to be proven through my record, but I think I wanted that stamp of timelessness that he brings. Yeah, I had wanted to feature these women called the Zawasa Queens on Pretoria. They make like folk electronic amazing music. They are in Tanzania. They're actually touring the world doing their thing. But you know, that didn't work out logistically. And I ended up featuring myself, my alter ego, and Tendai as well, who was the producer as well. So with that feature, which is my alter ego, I think I was so frustrated that, you know, I was just reciting this one mantra that I have all the answers that I need inside of me. And one of the answers was that verse, and that's in Pretoria. Yeah, those are the features.
Yeah, Pretoria is very like protest,
Yeah.
and I think you—that's the last song on the
That
album,
is the
isn't it?
last song.
Yeah, you
Yeah.
close out.
I
I think
close
you
out.
start off strongly, and you're
Yeah.
still you are very consistent through
Yes.
the
Yeah.
theme of the album. Another song that piqued my interest was Mushani. It sounds to me like it's a song about governance, and
Yes.
towards the end, I thought to myself, "Mune, you're so rebellious." You
Yeah,
say, "Ramaphosa Ashumi."
yeah, yeah.
Let's talk
Definitely.
about that song.
Mushani was the first song we made for the album. And at the time, I wasn't thinking about making a Shumelevend album. I had a whole title for an album that I had thought of in 2021 already when I had put out Shumelevend. I was like, this is where I'm at. These are the thoughts I've been having. This is what I'd like to express myself as an older person. And these are the people I would love to collaborate with years later. And I was slowly working on that music, and that music is still there. I just don't know if I'll go back to that. But I went to see a friend of mine, and I was going, there was just something that happened, an altercation I'd had with someone. And I went to see Shinoa just down here. He lives here, just down the road here. And got to his house, and he was working on some music, and he played me something. And I was like, oh, let me hop on that. And this is an everyday friend. So even though he's a musician, we don't make music really. We just hang out, we chill, we swim, we go on drives. And that particular day, I was like, yo, play me that. And we recorded, and then I took a sample of General Ramoshwana being sworn in. But the part where he's speaking about what is happening in Venda, you know, the chaos that's erupted, you know, learners have boycotted schools, people aren't working. And I was thinking about what a pre-colonial governance would look like. What would a South Africa or an Africa that isn't governed through the ways of, like, through Western ways, would look like? You know, Bushani is, you know, part of our rites of passage. You know, so men will go to Hogoni, which is initiation school, and then women will go to Msebetoni, which is also the same for them. And I'm literally just saying, let's go back to our ways of doing things, because it doesn't seem like the current way of doing things serve us, you know. And also heavily inspired by the idea that, you know, the West did not build its wealth and its stability on democracy, but it's their biggest export. You know, they love to serve to sell the idea of democracy. And unfortunately, you know, Ramaphosa had to catch strays, because one, he is a Venda man, and two, he is the leader of the country I am unhappy with. And also, he is the current representation of the very way of governing that I was fighting against. So I'm saying, hey, Ramaphosa, show me, you know, he's not working. And Ramaphosa is not really the person, but Ramaphosa is representing the way of governing. So I'm saying the way of governing does not work. But again, in the chorus in the middle, I'm also referencing all the other people who are leaders. Bompepu, Mobuso guy, where is this government? You know, even the guy who inspired the project, sort of like the Ramoshwana as well. I'm like, Ramoshwana, Mobuso guy. So it's me just questioning the existence of this way of governing, this way of doing things as African people who were ruling ourselves and who had our own international relations way before the arrival of the Dutch. Yeah.
What an amazing bone free you are.
Oh, thank you.
Rotangiwa.
Oh,
I
that's
love
my
this song.
jam.
It's so melodic. It's like, oh, it's
Yes.
so groovy.
Yeah.
It's like, let's
Yeah.
dance.
Rotangiwa feels like, Rotangiwa for me is the same song as It's like a mirror of either Bushani or Shumela Venda. Mm. Rotangiwa, again, is... Rotangiwa is set in parliament as the coup is happening, right? It's my imagination of how did they feel? Because I don't actually know the details, you know? When the army is arriving and there is no scheduled army parade and you see brown cars driving in with hundreds of soldiers and you're the leader of a country where your cabinet is unhappy with you or there's no opposition also because you've squashed the opposition and the army, the general of the army is marching in with the soldiers. So Rotangiwa means we're surrounded, you know? So I imagine that the song being recited by someone who is inside parliament, an impartial being who isn't really affected. Say, I don't know what roles people play in parliament, really. But imagine an interpreter who could still keep their job regardless of what government is there telling the song, or telling the story rather through the song, saying, you know, and it starts again. With the little loop in the beginning is what the people in Shumela Venda intro are singing.
Mm.
So that's just me singing it now in Rotangiwa. Tell Ramshona to bring back the government. It's not his mother's. And it's sort of like a report on what's happening outside. And then the verses go into this person saying, yo, Ramshona is here. He's here with the Venda Defense Force. The enemy is near, but tell Ramshwana it's not his mother's government. You know, that's sort of the sentiment outside. We're surrounded by enemies. And then the second version speaks to the previous leaders, you know, ask PR Mpepu, ask Ravere. It's, you know, parliament is a circus now. You know, it's always been circus. But, you know, tell Ramshwana that it's not his mother's government. We're surrounded by enemies. And for me, it's the reminder that we as South Africans could just wake up tomorrow and go take over the government if we wanted. But there is a way of doing things. And I think I love people who were revolutionary. I love people who stood up against, you know, bad governments. I love freedom fighters. But in a South African context, I always struggle to have freedom fighters, say Steve Biko or whoever, I don't know their names, feel close to me because of how far removed they were from Venda and how far removed the story of the Venda people was from the greater narrative. And part of what I really want with this project is for young Venda people to know that it doesn't have to be O.R. Tambo, who is the closest person to them, who fought for the struggle. They could find their own heroes, and that doesn't take away from O.R. Tambo being one of our struggle heroes that we celebrate in this country. But I think part of why the world is the way it is and part of why we feel so divided as South Africans through our tribes and divided as Africans as well, I think it's because we don't have a sense of security in our individual selves. I think if we sit as Bavenda people and we say, this is our story and these are our people, we're able to feel confident enough when the people of the former Gaza Nkulu say, oh, well, these are our heroes and this is our story. And then we're all able to find a common thread and say, these are the people who came together to make sure that we have what we have now. But until then, I think it'll be a tribalist, we're better, we're less than, oh, you're less than, you're this. And I just want that to be my little addition to the South African story as a young person. And whether people get that greater message or not, I think will be outside of my assignment. Yeah, but the message will be there.
Incredible. Yeah. And I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, how you encapsulate everything within that album in itself. I also find it interesting because someone is saying that, oh, you can never box Monet into a genre.
No.
Because you literally touch on so many sounds, so many topics, and you're not afraid to go there.
No.
So thank you for that. But what is next for Muneyi? I mean, of course, Shimela Venda just
dropped. We just released.
What is
I'm going to be touring quite a bit, both in South Africa and abroad as well. But I've also put a countdown to Muneyi, in a way, the Muneyi that people have access to. I think in the next few years, I would love to explore other things that aren't necessarily me being in front of a microphone and singing and sharing. I think I've shared enough for this timeline and that I'm on right now. And I think I also want to just explore what it's like to be a person on earth who has desires and interests outside of music. You know, I'm not a big music lover like that. I love storytelling. And like, you know, I studied film. I'd love to make films. Maybe make a film about my village. Maybe make a film about the sonic history of my people. I love to cook. I love food. Maybe make a film about food from Venda. Or maybe just make food and maybe write stories about food, or maybe travel the continent finding similarities between our food and all of that. Those are things I'm interested in. But right now, I'm really just excited to share and to hear stories. Like, people have so many stories about their own worlds, you know. People have stories about Puputatswana. They have stories about Transkei. Like, I love learning. I'm loving that the initial assignment was to find the story and to find the answer, and I'm finding it as I go. So that's what I'm going to be doing for me. That's what's next for me. Yeah.
I wish you all the best. Thank Whatever you. It is, I'll be right here cheering you on as I always do.
Thank you.
Before we go, I always ask my guests this particular question. What sits at the core of who Muneyi is? What sits there?
Compassion. Definitely compassion. I think even though I might not be able to define compassion right now, I think I know what that is. Just the awareness that when I'm most aware of myself as a human being, be it in joy or in vulnerability, just having the same awareness for the person next to me, that even in their flaws, and even in my lack of understanding them, they are a human being. And that's their primary function and their primary assignment on this earth is to be human and to experience themselves as a human being. That's what's really, really at the core. The world keeps getting more capitalistic and complex and individualistic. But I think compassion is the one thing that can always draw you back to you first. Compassion for yourself. And once you feel that and you experience that, you can see other people. You can just see a person and say, you're a person and I know what it's like to be a person. I might not know what it's like to be you, but I know what it's like to be a person. Yeah.
Wow, I love that. And thank you for living up to your name and being the one who gives.
Because right.
You really are the gift that keeps on giving.
It feels like a blessing and a curse. But
I love that. And with that, we have reached the end of our conversation. Thank you so much, Muneyi,
for
joining me. And to our viewers and listeners at home, please do continue to share the conversations, like, subscribe, all of. Go and listen to Shimela Venda, please, guys. Because what a thing it is. But thank you for watching the conversation. Thank you for listening. Until the next one, we're out.